I'm reminded when you're talking about changing around a Yeats poem, a Yeats love poem, of Coco Taylor doing a cover of Ted Nugent's Hey Baby. Instead of, you know, playing women like a player, she's playing men. And it's kind of like, we can play that game too, which is really interesting to hear that.
Again, and I would say in performance and popular culture, those roles are more easier to switch for some reason. But when you get into poetry that's so allied with literary traditions, it becomes, and it's just on the page because there's no play or there's not as much room to vacillate or play. I think really there's not as much room to play if you want to write a serious love poem. There's lots of silly, funny, humorous love poems, but if you actually want to convey love seriously on paper, it's a much more restrictive idiom.
Mm-hmm. A couple of takes on, many takes on projective writing that you share in the book, one of which is the poet is as much acted on by language as acting with language. And Kathleen Fraser describing the page as a, quote, graphically energetic site in which to manifest one's physical alignment with the arrival of language in the mind, which for someone who's had this experience, they're beautiful, eloquent ways of saying this. For someone who hasn't had this experience, they've got to seem like, you know, mystery school text or something like that. So can you describe your experience of writing like this?
That's a really good question. I would say that I was brought up within a sense of modernism, the material page, material language, the quotidian, and I never was totally on board with language poetry, although I was very influenced by it, partly because it didn't seem to me to leave enough room for subjectivity or agency on a more irrational level. I started out writing fairly traditional love poetry, and I thought, I never showed it to anyone because I just felt, this isn't good. You know, this is embarrassing. At a certain stage in my life, it seemed to me that dwelling in Eros, that it was energizing at the level of language, and that if one no longer tried to write as a lover, but actually simply engaged the Eros of the inspiration, that one entered into a somewhat magical zone with language. And that's part of the book, that the argument is that that extremity of emotion actually makes for an inspired verse. Love poets have always talked about being in love causes me to write more and more, and I'm inspired to write more and more because I'm in love. And although I don't go at it scientifically, I say that erotic states or being in love actually changes our relationship to language, and that it becomes inspired. It feels as if language has wings. It feels as if language is deeply resonant, that it speaks to us as outside of ourselves, the dictation, the outside. And I believe that love poets in the past have had similar experiences, but they've marshaled that back into the form. I love you so much, as opposed to writers such as those in my book. And my own experience was a sense that if you didn't tie it to a poetic speaker that was self-identified as the lover, that the language itself had considerable power and play. Some of that writing is in my book, Transducer, and I simply became very interested in the phenomenon and decided to explore it as a poetics. And I discovered that I could see it in Kathleen Fraser's work and in other poets, in Duncan, the kind of transformation that he goes through from his early poetry. So it just seemed to me that there was this hidden realm of intensified magical language. And by magical, I mean the state that a poet can get into where the semantics and the orality of the poetry is incredibly resonant and mobile. So, for instance, when you look at a poet like Ezra Pound and you one has to marvel at his language, if nothing else. It's not because he's a very great craftsman. I believe through craft, he creates a repertoire that he's drawing from, so it's not that he's like a naive poet, but without this kind of transportation that sexual love provides for him, that the sound and the semantic play of his poetry would never have become quite what they are and were. So that he learns an erotic writing because he finds it because he is in love. And then he continues to practice an erotic writing. He's not, you know, in love every day of his life when he writes the cantos, obviously, but he learns a different relationship to language. And I call language a medium. So I've recently written a paper that I argue that language as a material has taught and lent itself to a lot of understanding of avant-garde poetry. But if we think of language as a medium that plays us as we play it, as full of silences, nuances that can be brought to the surface when you regard it emotionally and energetically, that in fact it is mediumistic as opposed to the thing we work and craft.
Or as Duncan said, or he was quoted in The Ambassador from Venus, I don't use language, I cooperate with it.
Exactly.
He also said something to the effect of the poem being an event, not the record of an event.
Exactly.
And I think that's a subtle distinction that a lot of people don't get, but you can sense, perhaps after you've read a lot of it or written it yourself, the difference between that. And your knowledge of how the projectivism comes on is really quite exquisite.